Good morning. We are on Chapter 10, Spiritual Existence, in this book, The Master Speaks, by Joel Goldsmith. And it begins with meditation. Meditation is valuable even if the meditation lasts for only 1 or 2 minutes. Even if it is only a few minutes snatched for this purpose during the noon hour. Now, I used to do that when I worked in a factory. I would go out to my car, eat my lunch, and have a meditation. And it helped. It made my day really turn into synchronicity. One of the things I had to do while we were building digital magnetic tape drives was I had to solder some wires. And I just couldn't get it. I would do it, and the inspector would say, no. And I had to try it again. Well, I got tired of being rejected, and I knew this can't be that hard. So I sat down for a meditation in the bathroom. It was the only place I could be alone. And I don't remember now if I felt the presence or not. But I came back to my workbench and grabbed some solder and grabbed the wire. This time, it flowed onto the wire so smoothly, I almost couldn't believe it. I just touched the solder to the heat gun, and it flowed onto the wire. Beautifully, wonderfully. So, I was excited. I tried another. Same thing. It flowed onto the wire. Just as beautiful. And the inspector came and she said, okay, all these pass. So that was a situation while working in a factory that I learned I could meditate, and that would help me learn how to solder, if you can believe it. So, he continues with, it is important never to retire, never to go to bed, just as a human being, because then you would have nothing more nor less than a night of human sleep, which might or might not be restful. So acquire the habit of never doing anything without first opening consciousness to the inflow of spirit. Never engaging in any human activity without first opening consciousness to that inflow. And that's what I did there in the factory. I opened consciousness to the inflow. And it worked. I did that another time. When I left that factory, I went to another one, and then I felt like I needed to be working with people. So, since I was recovered from drug abuse, I applied at, I set up an interview at a detox facility. Now, the morning of the interview, I didn't know where it was. I knew approximately where it was. So, rather than taking highways, I took the streets. And I zigzagged down there, and I came out on a busy Boulevard, and looking across the street, there was the place, called the Wayne Fanning Alcohol Education Program. And I went in, and I was on time. I interviewed. I found out later that the director went into the office of the executive director and said, "You never believe what just stepped into my office." That was me. And so, of course, I got the job, and I ended up being a counselor. And I was good at paperwork, so it worked out well. On just a hunch. Never begin any human activity, whether at the beginning of the day, on awakening, whether it is preparing a meal, whether it is going out into the business world, whether it is undertaking household duties, or whether it is retiring for a nap or for a night's sleep. Never do that without specifically opening consciousness to the inflow of the spirit. Now, sometimes you feel that spirit during your meditation. Sometimes you feel nothing. But because you've opened consciousness, whether you feel it or not, that spirit, the spirit, will flow. For a while, you may not get any results, he says. That is, you may not be consciously aware of any results. But you will never open your consciousness to God without getting a result. Even though, at the time, you may not be aware of the result. In other words, you may meditate, you may open your consciousness, and you may feel no response. Do not let that disturb you. That has nothing to do with it. Joel says, "I went on in that same way for 8 months, meditating 5-6 times a day, and never in all that time having any answering response. Of course, I did it alone. I did not receive my inner teaching until after the meditation had been successfully accomplished. I only found my inner teacher when I found the ability to be still and know that I am God. For you, it will be much more simple. As you continue meditating, especially as you have the opportunity to do it with others who have achieved the ability to meditate, it will become more and more simple, and you will feel the response much more quickly. As I did at a class given by Herb Fitch called Healing Outside of Time. The other students in the audience, and there was about 200 of us, they brought their skill, their meditation skill. And so when we meditated together, it produced for me a very large, very huge experience, spiritual experience. It opened up something in me that's never been closed since then. Do not be discouraged if there seems to be no answer. If you seem to be no more spiritual after the meditation than before, or if you do not get any response. Remember, Behind you there are hundreds of generations of people who have lived in the outer world, living completely in the realm of effect. Can you imagine doing that? Well, I guess we've all done it. But even when I was messing around and didn't have a foothold on the spiritual path, I still felt the need to meditate. Although at that time, I didn't know how to meditate. Do you close your eyes and say, Om? Do you close your eyes and pray, say words? I didn't know. Until a very good friend of mine who became my teacher, Don, gave me a copy of The Art of Meditation. Then I had some direction about what to do. That is the heritage of a human being, and that is the thing that you must break through. In time, if you persevere, you will find yourself automatically settling down into the center of your own being. And from that point on, you will feel yourself to be an avenue through which all of the spirit continuously pours itself. You can almost feel how it flows out from the center of your being. Remember, not to be too concerned about human beings. You are not on the human plane of existence. Now that's a line right there that is really something. It should shock you. You are not on the human plane of existence. That does not mean that you should become cold and heartless. It does not mean that if somebody needs food, you are to give them a treatment and withhold the food. If somebody needs clothing, do not withhold it because you are so spiritual or metaphysical. I do not mean that. I mean that even while suffering it to be so now, do not accept the appearance as the reality, but always stand fast on the inner plane, realizing the presence of God. Now, realizing the presence of God means having the conscious awareness of the presence of God. Now, we come to another question. Do you believe that you would be living as an individual if you had never experienced human birth? Regardless of what you may think now, ponder that idea in the weeks to come. Where was I before I was born? Was I an individual? What would have happened to you had you not been born humanly? Where would you be? What would you be doing? It may give you an insight into what you may experience after the world says that you are dead. In reality, you will never be dead, but there may come a time when the world will believe that you are dead, and it would be wise for you to have some idea of what you will be doing, and where, and when, and how. Before Abraham was, I am. That means that Jesus existed as an actual individual identity, entity, before Abraham's human existence. It means that before Abraham, you existed as an individual, as a spiritual entity, as a spiritual identity. God, in manifesting itself individually, could not begin to express itself at a certain time in a certain place. God's manifestation of its own being has always existed. God's manifestation of its own being has existed since time began, since God itself began. Not that God ever did begin, because God is timeless and spaceless. God is infinite. God is eternal, but God is eternally expressed. God is eternally manifested, and has been ever since God has been God. Now, we think in terms of eternal life as this life going forward for eternity. But turn around, look over your shoulder. This life goes in the other direction, eternally. And so, you are eternal. Not this 5'8" person, but the consciousness behind the person. I have wanted for some time to have a painter paint a picture that I have in mind. It's a picture of a beach, and on one side is cliffs, and then there's sand on this side. And the water's coming up, and it's lapping against the shore. There's no birds or planes or boats or people. But the clouds overhead part for a minute, and a ray of sunshine comes down onto the beach. That's the painting I want. And I didn't know why, but I had another friend tell me, "Oh, well, that's consciousness shining." Yes, it is. Yes, it is. That manifestation of God, that expression is you, and it is I. Nothing can be added to God, and nothing can be taken from God. God has been and is fully manifested from the beginning. There is no unmanifested God. Which really changes your prayer, because you no longer are asking God to do something that He isn't already doing. No, your prayer becomes more like, "Awaken me. Reveal yourself. I know you are manifesting eternally. Now let me see it. Let me feel it." We are told not to pray for anything that's not spiritual. All right. Therefore, if you are the God entity in any form, the God identity, or the God individual before Abraham was, you have had conscious identity. I have had conscious individual identity ever since God has, and that is forever. By the same token, I am with you alway, even unto the end of the world. In other words, as long as God is God, God will individualize itself, or individually express itself, as individual being, spiritual being. Do you see how pointless it is to look at a human being and begin thinking about his age or his condition? That picture before the eyes is the illusion of human sense. To have the veil lifted permanently. I guess that's what we are all seeking. we have existed before this experience, how could we be of one mind, of one spirit and consciousness, if somewhere, somehow, we had not touched each other in consciousness? Once you catch the realization of this truth, of your immortal individuality, of the fact that you have existed, pre-existed, coexisted since God began, and that you will individualize the life that God is onto eternity, you will begin to understand the spiritual universe and spiritual existence. Then will come the realization of why we are on this spiritual path and why we have been drawn together. It cannot be for the purpose of developing a heart that beats regularly, or that $10 or $100 a week should be added to our income, or that we should find a more comfortable home in which to live. It surely was not to that end that we have come to this study, although the effect of this study will be better health, more happiness, a greater sense of peace within, probably a better home in which to live, and perhaps a greater sense of supply. These will be some of the effects of our study. But the real purpose is to awaken us to our spiritual, our true identity. To awaken us so that when we are awakened, we shall see him as he is and be satisfied with his likeness. The he to whom we are to be awakened and which we are to recognize is our own spiritual identity as Christ, our identity as the Son of God, as the spiritual image and likeness of God. It is our individual being, our spiritual identity to which we are to be awakened. Awake, thou that sleepest. That identity has existed and coexisted with God from the beginning. That individual identity will continue to be individual you and me until the end of the world, that is, until all mortal concepts disappear and we realize the spiritual universe. That was the vision of John. That was the vision of Paul, who wrote about the house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And that was my experience in that Herb Fitch seminar. That spiritual identity is the I which has existed throughout all time and which will continue to exist for all time to come. According to human values, we all appreciate motherhood, fatherhood, and parental and filial relationships, but we know from experience that they are not always as beautiful as they are sometimes pictured. For many years, he says, I myself was unable to discover any reason for my having been born. Others may not have had this experience, but at one period of my existence, I had to find some reason for living. Furthermore, as I looked about, I wondered why other men and women were living, working 8 hours a day, 9, 10 hours a day, with their only recompense a place to sleep and a hole to crawl into. It did not seem very purposeful or meaningful. Now I see what life can be when it is lifted above that mortal, human, finite, physical sense, when consciousness expands, and we catch the vision of each other as spiritual beings. we find a joy in human companionship hitherto unknown. That comes when we are seeing through spiritual light, not through a glass darkly. Because of this vision, I am more than ever convinced that spiritual friendship, spiritual companionship, would be a part of our existence even without the process of human birth. In fact, I know from the inner companionship I have experienced that all who have existed as individuals, as God manifesting itself as individual being, all of those still exist. They not only exist, but they commune with us. They tabernacle with us. We are not aware of this until we open the spiritual center of our being and find them there. We are unaware of their existence because they do not exist as mortals. They do not exist as human beings. They do not even exist as dead spirits or the spirits of the dead. They exist as I exist, as individual being, but as individual beings who have always been alive and have never died. On that higher plane of consciousness, you will never meet those who have lived and died. They have always been immortal. You find them in their immortality and not in the human sense of manhood or womanhood. And now he changes tracks here. Healing work, which is the proof of our work and of the rightness of the message, becomes easier, less labored, and much more fruitful as we perceive the spiritual nature of the you that you are and the I that I am, as we learn to drop this physical sense of existence. Now, all this may sound abstract or absolute, but please believe me, it is not. It is possible right here on the level where you are now and where I am now, and it is brought into manifestation and expression in the degree that you and I realize that our function in this work is not merely to make a physical body more comfortable or to make a material purse richer. As you rise above that stage of the work, you will no longer center your thought on the material plane of satisfaction, even on the financial plane. Then you will begin to think of the spiritual significance of individual being and spiritual supply, and you will find an entirely new world. The world is new when Christ has entered in. And you will see a new heaven and a new earth. The new world will appear here as improved humanhood. It will appear as improved body or as an improved pocketbook, but it will not be an improved anything, and you will know it. You will consider these outward effects of no importance because you will know that they are just the translation of the divine law into human terms. So as you open your consciousness for the inflow, you will find that the Spirit will really go before you and do that for you which you have expected to do humanly. Ultimately, you will find that you rarely have much to do humanly, that always the Spirit goes before you to make the crooked places straight, to open and do those things that heretofore you have thought you had to do. Spirit is a reality. Spirit is a power. Heretofore, we have merely said so, but now we really have to draw it forth and watch it at work. Spirit is God. Spirit is truth. Spirit is omnipresent, omniscient, and omnipotent. Once we have the conscious feeling of the presence, it lives our lives for us. But there must be the conscious communion. There must be the conscious oneness or conscious at-one-ment. There must be a conscious awareness of the presence. And that all takes place through the opening of consciousness to truth through meditation in one form or another. Sometimes the question is asked, do you believe that each one of us must go through certain experiences during our lives? No, I do not believe that. God is spirit, and God has no awareness of human pictures. Let's stick those together. Hang on. You are not on the human plane of existence. God is spirit, and God has no awareness of human pictures. Think of all the times we've prayed, oh, please, this or that. My niece is sick. Please help her. I have no money this Christmas, and I want to provide for these children. This time of year, my health deteriorates. All of those are beliefs. They exist as thoughts, maybe even emotionally, as feelings. Heretofore, we have merely said so, but now we really have to draw it forth and watch it at work. Spirit is God. Spirit is truth. Once we have the conscious feeling of the presence, it lives our lives for us. If we get out of the way and allow it, let it. All right. God has no awareness of these human pictures. So any time you go to God with the thought of a human picture that you want corrected, you are praying amiss. It is impossible to believe that God ordains that we should marry, be unhappy, or that we should work hard, faithfully, honestly, sincerely, accumulate some degree of financial competence, and then have a panic or a depression which wipes it out. No, these things I do not believe, nor do I believe that God ordains that some children should come into the world healthy and wealthy, and others should come into the world poverty-stricken or deformed. God is individual spiritual consciousness. And you know that's what you are, right? Individual, infinite spiritual consciousness. I myself am divine consciousness, he says elsewhere. I myself am infinite divine consciousness. And so, God is individual spiritual consciousness. Your consciousness is God. But consciousness is not aware of these human pictures. All these human pictures are thoughts in the mind. I learned that by experience, because when I experienced that height of consciousness during that Herb Fitch seminar, when I went outside, everywhere I looked, everything I looked at was my own presence. It was my infinite consciousness. And I could see that, and I could feel that. And so the human pictures weren't, well, they had no power. They had no substance. The substance I felt was infinite divine consciousness. If we were consciously aware that God is individual spiritual consciousness, then our experience would be God experiencing itself as us, and our life would contain nothing but the harmony of God. The experience of the prodigal son is one to which I often refer. The son probably became tired of receiving all his good from the father and wanted to go out and make a name for himself. That state of consciousness is humanhood. Humanhood is the prodigal son, wandering around in life, claiming to be Mary, Joe, or Joel. It sets up a separate identity, and it creates for itself all of the experiences through which it goes. Yet all the time it is really God made manifest. The proof of this is that everyone in the history of the world who has touched God consciousness has been freed of these mortal pictures, patterns, has been freed of sin, disease, lack, limitation. Life, to such a person, takes on an entirely different pattern, a pattern of freedom, wholeness, abundance, and happiness. Some people, however, who have already touched God consciousness have had other forms of suffering come upon them, perhaps because they later accepted a limited concept of life and set out to reform the world. In so doing, they brought upon themselves persecution and crucifixion. If each one of us were to realize this God consciousness and at the same time set the other person free to realize this for himself as well, then the religious leaders of our world would not have to go through such struggles. If I were to attempt to attract crowds to this message by preaching on the street corners, I might receive a very unpleasant reception, because I would be trying to bring spirit to the human mind, which is antagonistic to it. And why? Why is the human mind antagonistic to Christ? I feel it's antagonistic because it knows, I've been in the driver's seat for centuries. Who does this Christ think he is? And so it's antagonistic. It does not want to get out of the driver's seat. But it's okay, we won't force it out. We'll just every day practice meditation for 5 or 6 times a day, 2 or 5 minutes. And slowly, like water on a jagged rock, eventually smooths it, so smooth that you can skip it on the water. It does the same thing to the human mind. On the other hand, if I abide in the center of my being, if I sit in my office or home and rest content in my conscious oneness with God, one here, another there, two or three in another place, are attracted to me. And just as a remnant of those who had not bowed their knees to Baal was saved out for Elijah, so do I find the remnant that my state of consciousness has drawn to me. Then there are no antagonisms, no arguments, only a state of receptivity. I do not believe that human problems have anything to do with God, and for that reason they are not foreordained. They are only foreordained from the standpoint of humanhood. If we adopt stealing as our means of livelihood, it is foreordained that we will end up in jail, if we live long enough. But that is a pattern that we have drawn, not one that God has drawn. There is a striking example of that in the man Star Daily. The foreordained climax to the pattern he had established was a 20-year prison sentence. Yet one touch of the Christ nullified the whole human pattern. 3 years after the moment of his Christ realization, he was released on parole, even though a parole board stated that he could never be paroled. A human pattern is never spiritually ordained, nor is it ordained to be permanent, even humanly. It is merely a question of when and how soon the Christ comes. Now, I looked up Star Daily because I wasn't familiar with him. And it says here, Star Daily, from working for Al Capone to living for Jesus Christ. So he's a real individual who had a spiritual awakening and that turned his life around. The theme of this message is spiritual identity, spiritual activity, spiritual power, their development within our own being, and the need for touching within ourselves that spiritual center from which flow spiritual activity and spiritual power. Once that spiritual center has been touched, the power of spirit has been released, and it really lives itself as our experience. What Paul says becomes literally true. I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. Or of the Master, I can of mine own self do nothing. My doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. The essence of this message is that the Father is really living our life, doing all things and being all. Yes, but what life are we talking about? Are we talking about this life of human pictures? No. We're talking about the invisible spiritual life. Spirituality, however, does not come forth in a day, a week, or a month. Yes, it is true that Saul of Tarsus became Paul in a blinding flash. But remember, the number of years that Saul of Tarsus had been studying truth under the guidance of a spiritual teacher. That his spiritual guidance may or may not have been correct is not the significant factor. What is significant is that Saul was God hungry. Saul was so intent on God that he was willing to be a party to the persecution and murder of others for what he considered to be truth. There was an inner devotion to truth or God. So with us, what is important is the motive and the intent. If we persist in following a religious or metaphysical study for some material good that we are seeking, we shall never be a Paul. We shall never have the experience of illumination. If, however, we are God-hungry, if we are intent on learning the true nature of cause rather than demonstrating effect, then it really makes no difference whether we pursue that path as a Catholic, a Hebrew, a Hindu, or a Protestant, or as a follower of one of the numerous metaphysical movements. We will reach the goal, realization. Our search will carry us from one stage of consciousness to another. It may even take us from one church to another, or one teaching to another. Now, I've known a lot of people that have come over from A Course in Miracles to the Infinite Way. There are lots and lots. If we could learn all the truth that is contained in all the scriptures of the world, it still might not lead us to the spiritual experience. But as long as we are on the path of seeking the Spirit and the spiritual way of life, then the more we associate with those on the path, the better it will be. The more we can be together in the fellowship of the Spirit, whether it is in the form of attending lectures, classes, or group meetings, the more helpful it will be. Now that makes me want to go set up some classes that we can come to. Such fellowship leads to the unfolding of consciousness, unless somebody should attempt to crystallize these associations into an organization, so that the spirit is lost in the outer form. It is unfortunate that it is necessary to have even as little organization as there is in the Infinite Way to keep the message printed, published, and recorded. That does require some organization, but I am sure it will never become a church organization with church memberships. And for this reason, I long with all the infinity of my being to see every individual free in Christ. I long to see every individual so at one with God that we are only companions to each other on the way, helpers when one of us slips a little or needs encouragement. Therefore, let us never indulge such human pastimes as judgment, criticism, or condemnation of each other, because each one of us is going to have to work out his own spiritual unfoldment in an individual way. The way that I work mine out may not appeal to all of you, but that is my individual demonstration. So let me have the freedom to see and do things in my own way. Each one of you, in turn, will do things with which some of the other students may not agree. Let each one have the privilege of working it out and even failing if necessary. Failure may serve as a very good purpose in revealing the incorrect things we may be doing. Instead of criticizing or judging or condemning, let us support each other in this activity. No one could be in this work with any motive but that of spiritual development. To do otherwise would be a violation of spiritual integrity. We cannot put on the robe and then violate its ethics or teachings or morality. Any such violation will prove to be a boomerang. Out in the world, men can lie, cheat, steal, and defraud, and their evil deeds may not return to them for a long period of time. But it is not so with one who is on the spiritual path. No, it's almost immediate. I remember when I first started on this path, I had a negative thought system. And it was like living under a dark cloud. And then I began to meditate, I began to read and study, attend lectures, listen to Joel tapes, and I began to change. And without my even noticing, the darkness became light. And then one day, I did something wrong, and all of the darkness came back, just for that day, but it came back. And I went, whoa, what is this? Because I hadn't been living in that in quite a while. So you notice it immediately. A person who has opened his consciousness to spiritual truth, that person pays a heavy penalty for any conscious error in which he indulges, even for the mistakes he makes. An honest mistake will bring a degree of suffering to him, since that mistake must be pointed out to him in order for him to change. But conscious error, ambition for place or position, greed for money, lusting after the flesh, indulged in while wearing the robe, carries with it a heavy price. Let us as individuals live up to our highest developed sense of spiritual right. Do not think for a minute that I claim that I am, or that anybody I have ever known is fulfilling the fullness of the Christ. Our responsibility is to make the effort to live up to our highest developed sense of spiritual good. As long as we are doing that, we are on the right path. It is only when we come down from that level, and through some human means, or some human desire, find ourselves in conflict with the action of the Spirit, that trouble descends upon us. I had this experience back in 1990, I guess it was, when I lied to a lawyer. Yes, I know, not very spiritual, huh? But I was afraid that they were going to take my home and my marriage and everything else. And so fear got the better of me, and I lied to the lawyer. And I did it consciously. In fact, I walked on the streets where I lived, and I said to God, I know this is wrong, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I did. And I got through that whole debacle without anything sticking to me. So God spared me, I guess. I don't know. But I can tell you that it sure does feel bad when you do that. Consciously choose the wrong. And it's always fear that drives us to do that, isn't it? The spirit is a freeing action, and it frees us from material concepts. It frees us from material forms of existence. But this activity can be a terrifying thing when it strikes up against the opposite quality of spiritual dishonesty. I think that is why I use the term spiritual integrity so much. Now you can see that I remember precisely, exactly, where I went off the beam, consciously. Because the feeling was not good at all. We can do many things humanly that may not seem right to the world. But when we are on the spiritual path, it is then necessary to live up to our highest unfoldment, our highest developed sense of spiritual good. Then we do not have to fear what mortal man can do to us. We do not have to fear the past, the present, or the future. We make mistakes, don't we? But grace is there to pick us up and let us move forward, even in spite of the mistakes. Here, too, our history as human beings may not always conform to our spiritual heritage. Therefore, let us learn not to judge according to appearances. Let us not be too concerned about each other's human history. We come out of varying backgrounds of sin or purity, disease or health, ignorance or wisdom, abundance or poverty. But though the sin be as scarlet, it will be white as snow once we touch the spiritual level of consciousness. One of the great sins of organization is that often, after it accepts an individual in Christ, it then proceeds to ferret out his past and sit in judgment upon him. Yes, I'll give you one right now that you can sit in judgment if you want to. While I was doing drugs, I broke into houses. I didn't steal things. I stole medicine from the medicine cabinet. So there you go. I was once a not-so-nice individual. But even I have been smoothed over by this Christ water. Instead of working through a sense of forgiveness and understanding, it still applies the same code of human conduct or human punishment or human action as before. Even on this spiritual path, we make human mistakes. It has been done over and over again in the Protestant ministry, in the Catholic ministry, in the Hebrew ministry, and we all know that in the metaphysical ministry, people well along the path have been subject to temptation and have fallen. So let us not adopt the attitude of the world, criticism, judgment, or condemnation. Rather, let us see if we cannot work together and with our enlightenment lift each other up so as to make it impossible for anyone to fall by the wayside again. In other words, even though there is a sense of humanness among us, let us not judge humanly. Let us not act as the human world acts. let us not work from the standpoint of expulsion or ostracism. Let us rather take the attitude that we are all one, and therefore our purpose is upliftment, not punishment or excommunication. This is a very important point. Remember this, because it is only that state of consciousness which will know how to forgive an enemy, how to forgive those who despitefully use us, how, in other words, to fulfill the Christian doctrine of love one another. Love not only your friends and your neighbors, but love those who persecute you and hate you. Love, love, love. Forgive, forgive, forgive. And then finally, reach that state of consciousness in which you no longer take the mental sword of criticism, judgment, or condemnation. When that time comes, your consciousness will have become the light of the world, because in it there is neither love, hate, nor fear of error. Well, that's exactly 1 hour. And we are 3/4 of the way through this book. And I hope that going back to some of the things in here, which we may have forgotten, will help us on this path. Okay. Thank you for drawing this out. Thank you for allowing me to finish this talk. Thank you for listening to it. And thank you for your forgiveness of my past deeds, which of course weren't mine because I'm changed. But they took place through world mind, which I was manifesting. I didn't know how not to. Thanks to you, I've learned. I've come up higher. I try to live by spirit. Except when there's a slice of pepperoni pizza and it's the last one left. I'll grab that up and eat it. Okay. Love you guys. Thank you.